Morning, everybody. On 88.1, I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Maryland Morning. Today, we continue our series of weekly conversations with candidates for mayor of Baltimore. State Senator Catherine Pugh joins me to share her vision for Charm City. She's 65 years old and a Democrat. She is the majority leader of the Maryland Senate, where she has served for 9 years, representing a district that includes the West Baltimore neighborhoods that were at the epicenter of the violence last spring. Then the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra celebrates its 100th anniversary tomorrow. Today, a conversation with a woman who has played a big part of that storied history. For more than four decades, Rita Becker has been delighting and exciting kids as the narrator and creator of countless BSO children's programs. Tom Pelton puts the environment in focus. Nathan's got all the local news. Senator Catherine Pugh joins me right after these headlines.
I'm producer Kathleen Cahill. To catch the news, you'll need to listen to us live on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings at 9 o'clock on 88.1 FM in Baltimore and Frederick, and 106.9 in Ocean City, and streaming online at wypr.org/listen. Now, on with the show.
Thanks, Nathan. Good morning, everybody. Welcome. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you are with us. Today, we continue our series of conversations with people who have announced their intention to run for mayor of Baltimore. The deadline for filing with the Board of Elections was last Wednesday, and when the dust settled, we found that there will be 13 Democratic candidates on the April 26th primary ballot, one of whom, activist DeRay McKesson, filed about an hour before the deadline. Wow is right, Senator. Five Republicans have also registered to be on the ballot, three Green Party candidates, one Libertarian, two Independents. Five candidates who are not affiliated with any party will also appear on the general election ballot in November. We're spending every Wednesday here on Maryland Morning speaking with candidates about their vision for the city. Today, my guest is State Senator Catherine Pugh. She is a Democrat. She is 65 years old. She lives in Ashburton.
Go ahead.
But she didn't hear that from me. She lives in Ashburton. She has served on the Baltimore City Council and in the Maryland House of Delegates. Since 2007, she has represented the city of Baltimore as the senator from the 40th District. She has been the majority leader of the Maryland Senate since last year after serving as the deputy majority leader for 3 years and the deputy majority whip for 3 years prior to that. I'm exhausted just thinking about that,
Me
Senator.
Too.
It's good to see you.
It's good to be here.
Glad to have you here. So you ran for city council president back in 2003. You ran for mayor in 2011.
Wow.
You lost both those elections by 20,000 votes or so. It was a fairly substantial margin. When you were reelected to the Senate in 2006, you won with 90% of the vote. That would indicate that there's a good part of the electorate in the city of Baltimore that's very happy having you as the senator in the Maryland State House. Why do you think they should want you as their mayor instead?
Well, let me just start off by saying it's really great to be here. Thanks for this invitation, Tom. But let me remind you that, or let you know that I was a great city council person. I worked hard. I've been a good state senator. And I always tell people I was a good first grader, too, and I didn't stay there. But I believe that when you have a vision for a city in terms of the vision that I have and moving the city forward. And I know you talk about the 90% of the population in my district that elected me. They were glad to see me back in public office because they understand that I work hard. As the senator for my district, I don't think there's any other district that has worked hard to pull themselves together. And I say that because we weren't together, while other districts may be. In my district alone, we give away over $2 million in scholarships just in the years that I've been in office, because I focused on how do we improve the lives of the people who live in my district. Also, in terms of bond bills and so forth, we've given away another $2 million just to make sure that the projects and so forth that are needed get fixed. When I ran for president city council, I was not a very well-known person. I had served quite well in the city council, as you well know, having started the created the Fish Out of Water Project that raised $1 million and wired our classrooms, started the Baltimore Marathon that currently still has a $40 million impact on the city with the idea of creating literacy programs across this city because 38% of our population does not read above the sixth grade level. But my vision is to move Baltimore forward and to bring people together. I think I've demonstrated that. And I remember when I was sitting in the box with the First Lady at the invitation of President Obama. He said it's not just
at the State of the Union address.
At the State of the Union address. And he said it's not because of the work that you've done in your city or your state. It's because of the work that you've done nationwide and your ability to bring people together. This city needs a leader who can bring people together. And I think my background that most people did not know about, because I hear people talking about they don't want to be a politician, but the dictionary defines a politician as anybody who works for city government, anybody who's pursuing elective office, or anybody who's in elective office. But I enjoy being in public service. But I started out as a banker. I tell folks I came to Baltimore as a student, a teenager, to enter Morgan State University. I left there with a master's degree in business, but I also have worked in banking. I've worked in at the Council for Equal Business Opportunities, helping individuals in this city create and expand their businesses. I worked for one of the greatest mayors of all, William Donald Schaefer. I was the person who helped create neighborhood watch programs all over this city. I think the depth of my experience that most people did not know, even when we were looking at running in this race and we did our first poll, what it said was that 30% of the population didn't even know my name. And I understand that, because when you're focused on just getting things done, you know, I don't run around as I did in college as a cheerleader saying, you know, hey, look at me, this is what I've done. I just focus on getting the work done. You know, I didn't say, you know, hey, Catherine Pugh started the Baltimore Marathon or built the first new school in the city in 30 years. I just did the work.
But, you know, there are folks who would take that work and take that experience and use it as a sword against you at this particular political moment.
But how can you take...
Well, last night, for example, we've got Bernie Sanders coming out talking about a political revolution. We've got Donald Trump walking into the hotel ballroom in New Hampshire to the music of John Lennon singing, "You Say You Want a Revolution." On the national scale, at least on the national level, there is this anti-politician mood. Do you think any of that drifts down here? There are people who would say, well, there's maybe a fine line between experience and this sort of ossified notion of doing things the way they've always been done.
Well, let me just say
this. How do you answer that?
Well, first, Bernie Sanders is a politician. He may not be the favorite of many Democrats, but he is a politician. But I'm talking about Baltimore, and Baltimore does need a revolution in terms of how we focus on different areas of our city. But when you talk about the fiscal management of this city, you know, we have a double A bond rating, best bond rating in 50 years. Who do you contribute that to? This current administration. This current administration contributed, has raised the contribution to the Baltimore City public school system from 14% to 21%. You know, you have to understand not only how to run a business, but you also have to understand the politics of a city. I bring that experience to bear on this city. I'm not just a politician, and some people say just a politician. I like being a public servant. You know, we make choices in our life. You know, I started out in business, but my choice was to move towards public service because I believe in the people of this city. The things that I've done have enhanced the lives of people. I've passed over 150 pieces of legislation in this city that have improved the lives of people. I work 24/7. My thought is about how to move Baltimore City forward. My actions say that. And nobody has ever said to any other person who's moved from one level to the other, whether it is Congressman Cummings, who served in the state legislature, or Ben Cardin, who served in the state legislature, said, stay there. They said, go do what you feel is best for your people. And I'm doing what I feel is best for the citizens of Baltimore.
On 88.1, I'm Tom Hall. It's Maryland Morning. My guest this morning, Senator Catherine Pugh. She is one of 29 candidates for the office of mayor of the city of Baltimore, 13 of whom, like herself, are Democrats. Last week, your colleague in the Senate, Senator Lisa Gladden, endorsed one of your opponents in this race, David Warnock. You all work very closely together in the Senate. That must have been disappointing.
No, I don't work very closely with Lisa Gladden. She is a member of the city delegation. She does have some issues and some challenges, and I don't want to discuss those on the air. I think that people have a right to make choices. I'm sure that I will be endorsed by every other senator in our delegation, so that doesn't bother me at all. But, you know, I'm not preying on people to endorse me. People will endorse me in the city based on the work that I've done.
Let's talk about job creation. You have, as part of your suggestions and plan for your vision of the city, giving employment to ex-felons, people who are recently released from incarceration. Yesterday or the day before, the Senate did pass an override of the veto of that Governor Hogan signed to allow felons to vote earlier in the process when they get out. Talk about how people getting out of prison figures into your plans economically for the city.
Well, let me just say that there are about 10,000 ex-offenders who leave our institutions every year, but they come back to Baltimore City. And you can see some of them laying on our streets. You can see the tent cities popping up all over our city. I have legislation in currently to lift the ban on food stamps for ex-offenders, because I believe that once you've served your debt to society, that you ought to be treated as a citizen of the city, because you are expected to pay taxes at some point. And we only exacerbate the problem by banning people from food stamps, banning people from housing, banning people from careers. And so not only do I have legislation in to lift those particular areas of problem, but I also have legislation that was signed by Governor Hogan last year to create business opportunities for ex-offenders. And I always tell the story that the reason I did that was because when I was campaigning 5 years ago, I stopped at a local business and asked the gentleman if I could put a sign up. And he said, certainly. And then he asked me, he said, do you remember me? And I said, no. He said, you were my graduation speaker. So I'm thinking high school or college. And he says, no, in prison. I said, oh. He said, but I never forgot what you said. And he said, here's what you said, Senator. You said, congratulations, you got your GED. Guys, but let me just tell you, you had a hard road to toe. But let me make a suggestion. If you have the capacity or capability to do business, start one. I said, because nobody walks into anybody's business and asks them what their background is. What they care about is the quality of their service. So give good service. He said, that was me 5 years ago. So when you get through, go across town and put a sign on my other business. I believe that once someone has paid their debt to society, they ought to be allowed to enter and compete and participate and contribute taxes and be a part of the well-being and the growth of our city.
Everybody, I think, applauds your work ethic and the fact that you are out there every night. You're at so many meetings. You were during the unrest. You were on the street every night of those very tense couple of weeks. But I wonder, what do you think the particular capacity of being the mayor allows you to do? What would you be able to accomplish as the mayor that you're not able to accomplish as the senator?
You set the agenda for the city. You are the cheerleader. You're the person who brings everybody together. You're the one who focuses on how to move a city forward. You look at what modes of transportation you can help put in place when a city is denied the red line. You're the one who creates the vision for pulling people together. You're the one who helps to lure business back to the city. You're the one who sets the agenda for the city school system. You're the one who creates the jobs and the opportunities. You're the one who brings businesses across the city together to say, look, you know, 59% of the population in Baltimore County works in Baltimore City. We need to create opportunities for people who live in our city. We have a 25% poverty rate in the city.
And we will talk about the agenda. If I could impose upon you to hang out for a little bit, we're going to take a break for news, and we will be back with more from Senator Catherine Pugh. She's one of 13 Democrats running in the April 26th primary for the mayor of the city of Baltimore. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Here's Nathan.
Thanks, Tom. You're listening to the Maryland Morning Podcast, a service of your public radio, WYPR, in Baltimore. Find more podcasts at WYPR.org and tell us what you think by email, mdmorning@WYPR.org. Now, back to the podcast.
And welcome back on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Today, we're continuing our weekly series of conversations with candidates for mayor of the city of Baltimore. This morning, Democratic candidate State Senator Catherine Pugh joins me. She has a long resume in local political office, having served on the Baltimore City Council, in the House of Delegates, and since 2007 in the Maryland Senate, where she represents the city of Baltimore and serves as the majority leader. She is one of the founders of the Design School, a charter school in the Station
no,
North.
It's not,
Arts.
No, it's not a charter school.
It's not a
it
charter
is
school?
A public school.
Oh, a public school.
It is a public school. I showed the city how to build new schools. Public schools in the city. It is a public school serving 6th through 12th graders, and it is
with an emphasis on design,
fashion, architecture,
fashion
and design.
Yeah, all right. Well, I stand corrected.
Please.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
So the Design School, a public school,
yes,
in Station North. She was also a driving force behind the establishment of the Baltimore Marathon back in 2001. So we talked a little bit about job creation and the current administration. Can you pinpoint a way that your administration would be a departure from the Rawlings-Blake administration, or for that matter, a departure from administrations that may happen were one of your opponents to win this race?
Let's be real clear. I think it's important that every mayor set goals and objectives. And I'm going to keep on saying you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You examine some of the policies and things that are in place that have been done well. And when you talk about fiscal management of this city, it has been done well. You know, but when you talk about neighborhood development, I think we've done some things well as it relates to vacancy values. I would like to take and focus more on community development and filling up the corridors in our city, these empty retail corridors in our city, by investing in the people who live in our city. You know, when you talk about the number of boarded up houses that are in our city, I think this administration has made a dent in that. I like to accelerate that. I like to see us move towards erasing more of the boarded up houses, but looking at them as an opportunity, as has been looked at, to create better neighborhoods, to get people in our city investing in those communities, you know, whether it is through a land bank or special taxing districts that will offer people opportunities to recreate those neighborhoods. You know, again, my focus is going to be on improving education, creating jobs, lifting the least of us so that we lift all of us. And that's why, you know, you got to be concerned about those ex-offenders who are coming. And I call them, you know, citizens, returning citizens. You've got to have some concern for how they integrate themselves back into our communities. And making sure that as we look at, we got 23 new schools that are going to be built in this city. We want to make sure that we put in place opportunities for people in our city to work. And I'm going to make sure that we do that. I want to see us continue to expand what is going on in our downtown areas, but I want us to focus on how we reconfigure neighborhoods in our city. You know, neighborhoods like Penn North, where I heard someone say that when people were visiting the city, they said, wow, they did all of this during the unrest in Baltimore. No, they did not do all of this during the unrest in Baltimore. These are neighborhoods that have been neglected for decades. You can't do everything, but you can focus on doing some things. And I'm going to focus on community development, creating jobs, and making sure that we have the best public school system this city has ever seen.
Talk about the mayor's role, in the public school system. You've said that you'd like to regain control of the school system, which now abides largely with the state. Talk about the mechanics of how that happens.
So let me be clear that when I talk about taking control of the school system, that doesn't mean not accepting money from the state. Every school system in this state derives funds from the state based on a formula. I'm not talking about changing that. I'm talking about where the buck stops in terms of school board appointments, management of the school system, the relationship of the mayor to the school system, and how we put in place some fiscal practices as has been done in the city that will make the school system better. How do we measure, put in the metrics that will measure outcomes for our students? How do we focus on making sure that our children have the capacity to learn and compete in the classroom? Universal pre-K has to be essential in our school system. I want us, this mayor has moved the contribution of the city to the school system from 11-14 to now 21%. The average around the state is 35 to 50. My goal is to get us to 35% contribution on behalf of the city. But what does that mean? That means that I have to scrub the city's budget to see how our resources are being spent. And as the mayor, having some control over the school system, we get to scrub their budget as well and look at how they're employing our resources. What metrics need to be put in place that we miscount students and make sure that we know the student body that we have and the shortcomings and what is needed to have advanced students being able to compete for the careers that are popping up all over our city, whether it is at Amazon or I call it the Silicon Valley of the East Coast, what's happening in our downtown area and over there in Silos Point. I mean, there's some wonderful things happening in our city, but we got to make sure that our children have the ability to compete and to take some of those jobs.
Senator Catherine Pugh is my guest. She's one of the 13 candidates on the Democratic side, for the Office of Mayor of the City of Baltimore. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. When you talk about scrubbing the budget, Mayor Rawlings-Blake is saying that they're expecting a $75 million deficit this year. Structural deficit. She's asking city departments to cut each of their programs by about 5%. Can you scrub $75 million away and then find still some more to lower the property taxes and to have a greater chunk of the school system budget?
Let me just say about property tax, and everybody's talking about how they're going to reduce property taxes. Again, looking at, I really want to take a closer look at where Mayor Rawlings-Blake has done in terms of property tax reduction, because what she's done is she's already dropped the property tax by 14 cents and is on a trajectory. Her projection was by 2020 to have that reduction by 20 cents. She's on a trajectory that if she was running again, we would have dropped the property tax by 28 cents. So we are experiencing property tax reduction. It is still high, but you can't just drop property taxes. You have to do it in a responsible way. So one of the things that I'm going to be doing is appointing a property tax reduction commission that will look at what the mayor has done and see how we build on that. I would love to see us get, you know, I think we'll get under $2 by 2020. I like to see us shave it a little bit more. I looked at best practices, some things that are going on in other cities. For example, in D.C., their property tax for residents is much lower than their property tax for business. But they also have a higher tax for abandoned property. Property that is being held for periods of time that create boarded up houses in our neighborhoods.
We call them vacants.
But they have a higher property tax rate for those individuals. So, I mean, I think there are a lot of things that we can do. When you look at, for example, what tax increment financing has done for our city and building up the downtown area and some of our neighborhoods, the fact of the matter is that some of those properties are now coming back on the rolls. Instead of just putting it in the general fund, I would look at how do we use that monies towards property tax reduction. Again, when we look at the city's budget, and I've started to look at some of it, we have a lot of entities that are involved in our city's budget. And I believe that we will be able to find some savings in the city's budget. But at the same time, I don't believe that we want to just cut jobs and opportunities that people have for working for city government. I think we have to develop more income-generating entities in our city, bringing more businesses to our city, looking for more resources, and then employing the business community and the philanthropic community to focus. You know, you can go around the city and see some really great schools, for example. You could see some astonishing investments in certain areas of our cities and some of these schools. There ought to be a way that we pull the philanthropic community together and say, let's distribute this in such a way that it impacts more than one location or more than one school. And it's like Baltimore Design School. What makes Baltimore Design School good, and ultimately we hope that it will be great, is that you have a board of directors of individuals who care about what's going on in that school, and they infuse capital into that school. Can you imagine if every city school had a board of directors who were willing to infuse capital in their schools? And so I think that the philanthropy that exists in this city needs to be pulled together so that the wealth is distributed more evenly across the city.
When it comes to attracting employers to the city of Baltimore, companies like Amazon who built this, you know, distribution center, what's your pitch to them? One of the things that you've talked about is the need for paid sick leave. And there are those on the other side who say, you know, that's yet another ding on businesses that makes doing business in the city of Baltimore, doing business in the state of Maryland difficult because it's more expensive. What's your argument to a business who may be thinking about locating in
Baltimore? Well, I think if you were to ask Amazon and some of these other big companies who already provide sick leave, that they would tell you that is in fact not the case, because would you rather come to work sick and spread your germs all over the place and cause other people to be sick, or would you want to be able to stay home and take care of yourself and then come to work so that you don't spread your germs and create sickness throughout? I think you would choose the latter. And the other issue is that we're not saying give people sick leave. We're saying allow folks to earn sick leave. For every 30 hours you work, what we're asking is that you earn one hour of sick leave. which ends up being about 7.
And that's something that should be a matter of city legislation rather than individual company policy.
Well, let me just say this. When we talk about sick leave, I think that you will find that probably 90% of the companies and corporations do provide sick leave. So it's not just sick leave, any leave. Any leave that you provide can be used for sick leave. So we're not asking most companies and corporations to do anything that they're not already doing.
Talk about the police and the cultural shift that everybody agrees, including Commissioner Davis, agrees needs to take place within the police force to repair the relationship between the police force and, in particular, communities of color here in Baltimore. How can you, as the mayor, affect that change in culture?
Well, I think first you work cooperatively with the police department and you work cooperatively with your communities. And I happen to have co-chaired the police community work group. I've also had access to the President Obama's 21st Century Community Policing Commission and contributed to that as well. And I believe that bringing dignity to our communities by virtue of a mutual relationship with the police department and the communities will bring about the respect that is needed. But more importantly, I think that when you talk about the breakdown of our police department currently, I mean, not only cultural diversity, but a racial balance in our police department is needed, as well as looking at training, better training is needed. I think they can agree to that. Also, I think you want to put in incentives. The mayor has put in incentives for police officers to live in the city. We have a bill in the not just police officers, first-time responders, because, you know, we do have tax credits now for teachers and so forth. We give tax credits for first-time home buyers. But what we want now is for police officers to live in our city. 75% of our police force does not live in Baltimore City. And as a result, if you look at other jurisdictions around our city, our state, they get to take their cars home. I don't think you want 75% of your police officers not living in your city to take their cars home. We want them present in our neighborhoods. I love the idea of neighborhood watch programs being expanded in our city. I also like the culture of allowing young people to participate in our criminal justice system or the safety of their schools, bringing back safety patrols and so forth, you know, giving them some ownership in creating safety in our neighborhoods. One of the big problems in our city is the lighting. This is a very dark city. And I was down City Hall with a group of business people in Old Goucher who were screaming about the fact that, you know, it's so dark that the people aren't even coming to their businesses because they don't feel safe.
Sure.
So lighting up our city, creating a culture of respect between the police officers and the community is essential. Strengthening our civilian review board, I think, is important for our city.
We're going to have to call it there. I appreciate your time, Senator Pugh. It's always good to talk to you, and we will continue our conversations as the campaign continues.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. State Senator Catherine Pugh, she's a Democratic candidate for mayor of Baltimore City. We will continue our conversations with all the mayoral candidates and people seeking other offices in Maryland next Wednesday and every Wednesday leading up to the April 26th primary election. Next week, my guest will be Democratic candidate, City Councilman Carl Stokes. There are a number of mayoral forums coming up. On February 24th, the Open Society Institute and the Baltimore City Paper will host a forum at Pleasant Hope Baptist Church. Our friends E.R. Shipp and Mark Steiner from WEAA Radio will moderate that event. I will be moderating a mayoral forum on March 3rd at the National Federation of the Blind in Federal Hill. That event is sponsored by the League of Women Voters. We've got a link with the details for all of these events on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. If you are not registered to vote, you have until April 5th to register to be able to participate in this very important election. We've got a link on our website with registration information. So if you know folks who aren't registered, please come to our website, send them the link. Coming up later in the broadcast, a conversation with Rita Becker, who's got one of the most interesting jobs at the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. I'm Tom Hall. It's Maryland Morning. Now it's time for the Environment in Focus.
If you want to join in on the conversation, go to our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning, and make a comment. We'd love to hear from you. You can also check out our audio archives there and learn more about what you just heard, or even make a pledge to support local programming. Again, that's wypr.org/Maryland Morning. Now, back to the show.
The very first concert of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra took place 100 years ago tomorrow. And to celebrate this milestone, tomorrow night, the BSO will play music by Gershwin, Bernstein, Ravel, and Mason Bates, along with the premiere of a commission by Kristen Custer. Superstar violinist Joshua Bell will join Maren Alsop and the band, and one of the people making remarks at this event will be Rita Becker. She has been part of the BSO for 42 years. She has made a specialty of a very unique niche in classical music as a narrator of concert music. In addition to narrating well-known pieces like Peter and the Wolf, which we're listening to in the background, Rita has also designed and written countless programs for children, and for more than four decades, generations of young people have received their first exposure to classical music under her masterful tutelage. I've had the great pleasure of working with Rita on many projects with the Baltimore Choral Arts Society, and I'm delighted that she is joining me this morning here in Studio A. How you doing?
I'm fine and so happy to be here.
Delighted to have you here. So tell us how you got into this very unique, singular gig of being a narrator of concert music.
Well, when I was a little girl, my parents gave me a recording of Peter and the Wolf with Basil Rathbone, scary guy, wonderful. And it was just enchanting. I absolutely thought it was the best thing I ever heard. And I really wanted to speak to music. I thought it was wonderful. And when people asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, I'd say I want to be the person who says Peter and the Wolf. And so my life, I, you know, went to school. I studied music. I played piano. I sang. So I was very musical. And I went to a lot of concerts at the Syria Mosque. This was before Heinz Hall in Pittsburgh, where I lived. And Fritz Reiner was the conductor then.
Of the Pittsburgh Symphony.
Yes, very, very famous. And I loved orchestral music. So I had that kind of a background. And in college, I studied music and I studied drama. And I was in musicals and I was in summer stock. But I went into speech pathology because I was also interested in the sciences and in doing something that would be good. And so that would be, that would help people. Mm-hmm. I didn't think of the music in that way. I do now.
Yeah.
But speech pathology. And so after being in that for 10 years, I was here at University Hospital. And I just decided that I wanted to go to Peabody and study narration. Well, nobody teaches narration.
Yeah, so you walk into the office of the Dean of Peabody and say, I want to study narration.
And he was charmed. He thought that was such a great idea. So really, it was a research project for me. I had use of the library of scores, and I could read a score very well. I had use of the recording library. So what I did was to see which pieces were recorded the most. And I decided to study those and memorize them.
And they included pieces like Peter and the Wolf.
Peter the Wolf.
Or King David of Onegair.
Yes, and Joan of Arc at the Stake, and Histoire du Soldat, The Story of a Soldier by Stravinsky, uh-huh. Many of those, and Walton's Facade. And so one day I was introduced by Richard Franco Goldman, who was the head of Peabody then, to their new music director. His name was Fred Prausnitz. And he said, Fred, this is Rita Becker. She is a rara avis, a rare bird. She's a narrator. And Fred Prausnitz said to me, by any chance, have you studied Jeanne d'Arc, he said, Jeanne d'Arc. I said, yes.
An oratorio by the French composer, Swiss composer, Arthur Honegger.
Exactly.
About Joan of Arc.
Exactly. And I said, well, you know, I have it memorized, but in English. And he said, I have always wanted to do that piece. Please come in and let me hear what you're doing. And that was my first big performance. I was cast as Joan. And it is a speaking role in this opera. So that was wonderful.
Yeah. And not only have you narrated pieces for which the narration is already written, either by the composer or by a particular librettist with whom the composer was working, but you yourself have designed just tons and tons of programs for children around basic themes. And so your job is really almost as much as a writer and creator as it is as a performer, isn't it?
Well, I love programming. Along the way, I've heard so much orchestral music, so it's very familiar to me, and things fall in place. It's fun to sit in a planning meeting to decide what the theme is and so on. And yes, that has been something that has kept me so interested and so involved.
You were enthralled yourself as a kid, as a child. You have done, I don't know, 9 billion at last count performances with the BSO and other orchestras for children. What do you think it's going to take to enthrall this next generation of 8-year-olds and 11-year-olds?
Well, I think that a symphony orchestra live is one of the most fabulous experiences. Kids are listening and watching a lot now. When I first did Peter and the Wolf with Commissiona years ago, I was the feature, the narrator. But in subsequent years, we've used Bob Brown puppets because kids are used to something visual to hold their attention. So we have to design things to hold their attention. But look, the music is something that will be forever. So we have a great opportunity if we just expose them to great concerts. I think that there's a place for it.
The Baltimore Symphony, which you've played such an integral part of this 100-year history, has embarked in the last several years on this program called ORCIDS. And you and Bob Meyerhoff have been particularly personally very generous to that program, donating a lot of money to help get that going. Is ORCIDS the future of orchestras around the country? Is Baltimore becoming a paradigm for other
orchestras? I hope so. I hope so very much. ORCIDS is incredible. And when I talked before about doing something that is good for people when I went into speech pathology, ORCIDS is a program that is not only about and with and using music. It's a program in which kids get instruments and learn how to play.
And these are often kids from economically deprived areas.
And we start.
These are after-school programs.
And in-school programs. Mm-hmm. And it's pre-K all the way through until high school. And we actually had several kids going to the School for the Arts right now who were ORCIDS.
Yeah, starting
so
that next generation.
This makes such a difference in their lives.
Well, Rita Becker, you have made quite a difference with the Baltimore Symphony, and we appreciate it. Happy 100th anniversary to them, and we look forward to the concert tomorrow night. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Rita Becker has been narrating concerts of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra and many other institutions for more than four decades. She'll be speaking briefly tomorrow night as the BSO marks the 100th anniversary of their very first concert back in 1916. Joshua Bell joins Maren Alsop in the suite from West Side Story by Leonard Bernstein. They'll also play a new piece by Mason Bates, a new commission by Kristen Custer, an overture by Gershwin, and Ravel's Bolero. Come to WIPR.org/Maryland Morning for all the details. That's it for us today. Coming up Friday, Nathan Sterner has the latest information on the Zika virus. The Juanito Pascual Flamenco Trio gives us an in-studio sample of what they'll play at the Weinberg Center in Frederick on Friday night. And our resident foodie, Sasha Wallhander, stops by with tips for treats that we can make for our Valentine's sweethearts. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks so much for listening. Garrison Keillor's up next with the Writer's Almanac. Have a great day.